11 p.m. The moon rises black and foreboding over the forest. Although the day was warm and the summer solstice will arrive in less than a fortnight, the night air is cold and tinged with trepidation. Not dogs, trepidation. The wind rises, kicks up little plumes of wooded debris, propels them up into the air. Against the Stygian shadow of the moon, they vanish into the darkness like a dead scream. I am lying on a carpet of pine needles. Though normally soft, the pull of the lunar tides causes them to twist upwards toward the sky, impaling me like a field of carpet tacks. I last lay on this forest floor when I was seeking a naturopathic road to compositional inspiration. That time, it worked. Benign woodland sounds and meadow fragrances eased me into a serene, meditative state that fostered rich musical ideas. But this time, I am unable to block out the abstract angst that pervades me, and compositional enlightenment remains elusive. The angst is a self-fulfilling prophecy prognosticated by a no-joke fortune cookie. Hence, I would caution the hearty Mushu trencherman to hold his scoffs in check while regarding his next cookie maxim. The moon looms overhead, sulky and threatening. That moon has the most amazing sounds.
It's just distant wolves.
Oh, distant. Oh,
must
all right.
Be something like that.
Yeah. Not at all representative of the buoyant moon in June songs of the 1940s. Matching the doleful lunar mood, the air temperature plummets, settling over me like a tomb. Dense clouds of condensation from my ragged exhalations swirl in front of me, effecting a shifting and thoroughly maddening Rorschach dance. In place of the gentle forest sounds are endlessly annoying beta waves. All right, do a beta wave. Okay. All right, enough waves.
They're endlessly annoying.
Oh, that's right. They are that. As if I'm doing penance in a small... I'm losing my train of consonant. Yes. I'll start again. In place of the gentle forest sounds are endlessly annoying beta waves. As if I'm doing penance in a small oven with a bag of microwavable popcorn. No popcorn?
No. You want popcorn, Sam? Right. You're asking for trouble.
I thought so. Normally, diurnal forest creatures...
That's exactly what you get from that diurnal stuff.
Forest creatures appear to have been roused by the bleak, black moon. They emerge from tiny catacombs in the ground to scurry around and over me, their fangs flapping in syncopated concert with a dozen spindly legs. The moon abruptly yaws to the northernmost side of the horizon, and I feel a corresponding pull from the lunar tides. It's a sickening feeling, as if all of my gibbous-shaped internal organs have swiveled 15 degrees. The scores of pine needles in my back also twist, like scented, sadistic acupuncture. A low moan issues from the earth directly beneath me, and I roll to one side just as a fissure opens up where I had lain, swallowing any pine needles that weren't already lodged in my back. Dark vapors, even more Cimmerian than the moon, gush from the crack in the ground. They reek of rank rot, and I retch. As the miasma collides with the night air, a gaseous argument on the subatomic level produces a horrendous growl, which is even more unsettling than the beta waves. I roll a bit farther from the edge of the abyss and come face to carapace with one of the aforementioned forest creatures, which is fixing me with a balefully lunatic stare. Or stares, really, since the beast is graced with thousands of active sentient omatidia. One segment winks at me, then another. Then another, more and more, until a chain reaction of disconcerting blepharospasms results. fighting the urge to blink back, I turn away and gape back into the maw of the rent earth. Perhaps my strange surroundings are inducing abnormally high readings on my delusionometer, but I see, or I think I see, the source of the terrible forest moaning. It is coming from hundreds of taupe-robed grotesqueries that are disgorging from the fissure. As they pass overhead, I detect a kind of linear logic to the moaning. Each figure, for lack of a better word, appears to convey a different moan. I note that there is a very fine line between these acoustic events and the musical ideas I had sought. It is my inspiration after all. Equally inspiring, and happily with none of the impaling pine needles and only a hint of the miasma, is Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar. And here with his own fortune cookie analysis of today's 315th episode is Calvos. He shouldn't write notes that aren't on the piano.
It's a player piano,
oh,
too.
Oh, is it?
Yes, it's Gottfried Wilhelm Rass.
Well, we know him.
Yes, he and Monique Dage are our guests today at the top of the hour. That is the mechanized player piano at the Logos Foundation with a composition of Gottfried's from 1970s called Fortepiano for two player pianos. These are all MIDI-controlled player pianos. They're not things with rolls, with punched holes in them.
I see.
Yeah, and this particular piano is one of a pair of concert grands that are outfitted with a rack of stuff that pushes the keys down, and then there are a couple of extras that are on the cheek blocks to tap the cheek blocks as well. Which you did here. Oh, it is the 315th episode. That's divisible by five. I like things divisible by five.
Why is that? Because it assumes that there will soon be another Best of the Bazaar.
Yes, it is. It means that you, and plus, I think the factors are 9, 7, and 5, aren't they?
That's too much for me right
yes,
now.
Yes, okay, right. Well, I like to factor. Otherwise, it's the only math I know how to do anymore.
I see.
Ah, yes. Well, oh, lots of announcements to have later. Right now, we're going to listen to another piece of Gottfried Wilhelm Rass. This is from
the interview today. Yes.
Yes, today. Yes, today. In just 20 minutes, we're going to have, and it's an interesting interview for a number of reasons, not least of which is the fact that we have to interrupt the interview many times because it is 68 continuous minutes of fighting between Gottfried and Monique.
Oh, fine.
So it is really fun. You will enjoy it enormously. We will play some stuff that I recorded there of their instruments playing, some materials that they performed for us, and some pre-recorded stuff. So this actually will be another two-week interview, which we'll break up with some music, but it's just dandy fun. It's one of those days when we wish we had like a four-hour show so we could play the whole interview and all the accompanying music in one. Just can't do it. But come back here in 20 minutes and we'll run that interview with Gottfried and Monique. Yes?
I presume the listeners can click onto a particular website to see photographs of the materials.
Oh, of course. Not only photographs, but an animated photograph of Monique and Gottfried. That's on calvos.org. And look for the interview guests Monique Dage and Gottfried Wilhelm Rass. And if you don't know how to spell that, well, doggone it. Rass is R-A-E-S.
Makes
and
sense.
And Dage is D-A-R-G-E.
They couldn't type in Logos in the search. That wouldn't help.
Well, I hate to say it, but the search engine that we are provided with seems to be broken right now.
Oh, poo.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, I just discovered that. So the search engine seems to keeps coming up something that says content index is corrupt.
Oh,
and it
like
doesn't
us.
I was going to say it doesn't really refer to us. But anyway, all right, let's listen to some Gottfried Wilhelm Rass here. This is from the where is it? Here it is. This is from the Jumpy Variations from 1995. This is let's listen to the first section called Tendering. Thank you. Gottfried Wilhelm Rass. That's the first section of his jumpy variations. That called Tendering.
Tendering and jumpy. Well, yeah, there is a...
Well, I don't know if it was tender or in exchange for perhaps, yes, payment, which is interesting because these all the Logos Foundation CDs are declared to be copyright-free and in the public domain.
My goodness, good of them.
Yes, it's very interesting. They're very sort of politically intense about that issue. They talk about it on their website, and they specifically put public domain, and also the name of the label is called public domain.
Good
so that even
them.
Helps even more. Okay, let's listen to some Monique Darge, the other pair of the Logos duo, and we'll start that one off, and then we'll make our trek over to Ghent, otherwise known as Ghent, in Belgium, to talk to Logos. Here it is, a little bit of Monique Darge and what's the name of this piece? It's Waves. It's got some waves in it, something about waves. Oh, yes, Dark Waves, the best kind.
Deutsch. Oh, wie? 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 Aloha from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. This is Jim Grant, and I can't help but notice that you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music.
Your stop for non-pop.
Oh, that too.
Yes, here on WGDR Plainfield. Let's articulate that better. WGDR Plainfield.
I thought you meant stop for non-pop.
Yes, that too.
Without all plosives. Of the above.
No plosives. Ah, well, yes, that was Monique Darge, and that was her Dark Waves electronics and voice. And before that, we heard some Hotrud Willem Ross. They are the Logos Duo, and we're doing a pair of weeks, basically, about the Logos Duo, including the interview, and we're going to start off with some drums.
Do you want to explain that, or just do it?
Yeah, I'll explain very briefly. They're MIDI drums. Hotrud has a little laptop computer sitting there with wires coming out of the back, all kinds of colors, very pretty, that go to blocks of electronic parts that look quite sinister, with long ropes of cables that go over to some nasty-looking motorized parts.
Oh, so it's analog.
Oh, yes, and it hooks up, and there's these solenoids and things, and again, if you go to calvos.org and look for the pages for Hotrud Willem Ross or Monique Darge, you will see pictures of those instruments. There's a whole set of photographs of them, and the drums just sort of punch at the drums. They're real drums. They have solenoids on them that make hammers go, and they make quite a racket. So shall we go to beautiful downtown Ghent, to the Logos Foundation? Here it is, and we're going to do us some MIDI drums. It's Calvos and Damien on the road, just Calvos here, and we're in Kent. We're with, in the confines of the metal ceiling of the Logos Foundation, and this is a sight to see. We should be here with video instead of audio, but Calvos and Damien bring you audio and things for your ears. We're here with, and I'm going to try to do this, Monique Darge.
Yes.
And Hotrud Willem Ross.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Welcome to Calvos and Damien.
Thank you to come here all the way.
So, this is an amazing place. You have many people who have worked with you. But who are you? Monique, let's start with you.
How should I give a presentation of myself? I've been studying as a child the violin, because I wanted to study a harp, and that was a very frustrating thing, this music school, so I quit it after 5 years, and then I met the Logos, and in that time I was studying visual arts and art history, and I thought, wow, you can do great things with music. In between that time, the only great piece that I could have found on the radio was a piece by Varese, which was a very interesting Americ for my ears at that time, when I was around 16 years old. And then, since I met Logos, I'm working together with Logos with experimental music and combining music with other media. And I myself, I'm for the moment still playing my violin, but in an all different way, not at all classical. I just play my own violin, improvised, and I make soundscape compositions. And I also love to make a set of, you could call them music boxes, but it's not a music box in a classical way. It's a box which makes sounds.
Yes, and you have them here. They're quite amazing. Tell more about those.
These music boxes are small objects that fit in a box. I start with a box that I get from a friend or that I find on the flea market. All of a sudden, the shape of the box attracts my attention. I don't know why. Something happens. That box will be a music box. And then I bring it home and I let it sit there for a while without doing something with it. Sometimes immediately I think, this and this object should go in there. And that are found objects or toys or just an association. And I start always with the visuals. And whilst making the visuals, I'm thinking about what kind of sound do I want to get in here. And slowly I get an idea of a sound. And that's for me the hardest part, to get the sound in there. Because I hear the sound, but I cannot grab that sound. And then I find something. And in the end, when I am happy with the result, the sound and visual together, the box is finished. And it can be like a do-it-yourself music box, in the sense that you have a key,
yes,
and notes, nuts, because that's a language game in Dutch. Noten are nuts and...
written
notes.
Yes.
And then you also have the paper with the stats, so it's a do-it-yourself music box. Or it's a silent music box, of course, Gage influenced all of us.
Yes.
Start with
yes.
Gage. And there is no sound in that box, but then there is a sound because there is a lock, and you can do tick on the lock. And that music box is under a globe in plexiglass, so you cannot touch it because it's silent. And the sound is there, but it cannot go out, or you cannot touch it to make the sound. Most of the time it's a sound by rattling things or by shaking, a few with very, 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 very low-tech, low-fidelity electronics.
Electronics.
I'm the opposite,
yeah,
of God. He's so good in high-tech, so I do the opposite. And it can be like some of these birthday cards you open and sing the song of happy birthday. But if the batteries are really low, I mount them with
a photo cell,
and then if the battery is very low, you can play with them. And
yeah. This, we have something in common, because in 1973, I built a sculpture made of roses, and inside the flower, the rose, and inside the roses were the photo cells and the oscillators, and as the light changed in the room, they would pulse differently, and as people walked by,
God, it also made the optophone that makes me think of what you're describing there with different photocells, and you can also with the hands move.
Yes, yes.
In top of that instrument. So.
Well, yes, indeed.
I think we have many other things in common. We are just all human beings loving sound and music.
Let's take a quick skip over to Cookbook.
And we'll take a quick skip over there in just a second. Right now what we're going to listen to is a little piece of Monique Darge. This is from the CD called Mocha Q, Monique Darge and Count Fleet. And these are not titled. That's just cut number 5.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick skip over to Cookwood and tell us about your background and how you became involved in this.
Well, I started at a very early age, my early childhood, with music, coming from a pretty bourgeois family. So I was sent to the conservatory.
Another conservatory.
Then, of course. Then, by necessity, I ended up in the 60s, late 60s, in the conservatory, in the student movement, etc. And we started discussions in the conservatory with other students. I became involved in the student movement. Finally came to this consciousness that conservatories were sort of very, very sick institutions, in that everything musicians were supposed to do was reproducing scores that already existed from the past and nothing but reproduction. Now we thought this was absolutely insane, since in the Fine Arts Academy, nobody would conceive even of making it fulfillment of life to just redraw Rembrandt or Van Eyck or something like that. So we decided, made it to a political decision, we refused to reproduce, we were going to produce new music. Of course, new music. Consequence of that, well, we did that. We formed a group. That was the origin of the Logos Group in 1968. We did concerts, etc., made scandals at that time. Well, scandals were little things like putting ping pong balls in the piano and things like that. Enough to glissandi on the cello was enough to cause a scandal, really. At the end, we were kicked out of the conservatory as a group, as a global. So we were ungifted, untalented.
Did you feel like you had achieved something by getting kicked out?
Yes, okay. Definitely. That was the result. And, well, the rules were such that you had to play this and that piece in order to become then that degree. But since we refused to do those pieces, so we excluded ourselves from the system. But that was the 60s. So that became actually the start of a Logos Group and of this consciousness that we've gone and it's been going on since then. In 70, Monique, I think 71, Monique joined the group only. That's the origin. Now we can talk many different directions, but one of the first things we became conscious of is that we couldn't do this in complete isolation, start a new music group. In Belgium, there was no new music tradition or whatsoever, actually very, very, very little. So we started organizing concerts in order to get contact with people internationally that were following similar tracks. Early on, we had contacts with people like the Scratch Orchestra with Cornelius Cardew in England, people like Kevin Pryors, and well, many, many, many people that formed the European scene around that time. And not only the European, actually also American, because we early on had the contacts with people like Warren Bird, for instance.
Warren is now in Australia.
He's, right now he's in the U.S. But
just emailed me yesterday. In July. And he will come here to play a concert just before going to on his way to Australia.
Good. He's a lot of fun. He's very funny.
Yeah.
But going on, so we took these contacts. We realized that in order to get these contacts, we had to organize concerts for people. Also, next to our own creative work in terms of as a production center or music production group. So we came into the necessity we had to have some form of an organization to do that, because you have to put posters, find a hall, do the concerts, and all the usual stuff.
Yeah. And a name is always good, you know. And you chose a very fine name.
Well, it's a strange name, in fact, because sometimes people get confused by it. They think it's something biblical or something, which it is not. Because logos, in old Greek, means rationality, means proportion, things like that.
Yes.
And actually, the title, the name Logos, comes from the name I had for that first, one of the compositions that caused the scandal in the conservatory. That piece was called Logos 3 over 5, because that's two prime numbers, and all the musicians got to play in a different meter. That was conducted with an electronic metronome that I designed at that time, computer controlled, well, not computer, but digitally controlled in a way, with flashing lights, etc., so we could gets these different tempi going. And that piece caused a scandal, and we were nicknamed the Logos Group because we played that piece. And so we just kept the name.
Yeah,
so that's sort of a historical accident. So after many years of doing that, organizing festivals and doing our own concerts all over Europe at the beginning, we start more and more feeling the necessity of having a hall of our own, because if you don't have a hall where you can always put things on, you become very slowish as an organization.
Yes.
Because it takes long ahead to plan for having a hall to invite people,
yes.
and getting,
yes.
agreeing with theaters, and we had lots of troubles with theaters, because if you go to other organizations that have halls, they generally do not understand that if you do a concert, that you might need more than, let's say, half an hour before the concert, you show up with the musician,
yeah,
hey, you do
exactly.
Make some nice music, bam, and it's done. But this is not this type of music.
Right.
Sometimes it involves
right.
2 or 3 days of setting up
yes.
special
yep.
stuff. And yep. that really, so we got in conflict with, not because they were sad to us or something like
no.
but just because of a basic misunderstanding
exactly.
about the needs of what we were doing.
Yep.
So we felt the necessity we have to build our own halls. So we bought a house, et cetera, and made the first concert studio where we could have all the equipment that was necessary, quad amplification, film projection, Super 8, I don't know what, it's about all the technical facilities, et cetera. So after we had that, and that was going well for about 10, 12 years, until then became a little bit larger, and we bought a neighboring building, that's where we're sitting now. And there I had this dream, an old dream of mine, of building a tetrahedron. Now, this concert space, as you described it, with the metal structure, is in tetrahedron shape. Now, this is nothing nothing new age about it, nothing religious about it. The only reason it's purely acoustic. It is that the tetrahedron intrinsically has no standing waves, has no resonant frequency.
Uh-huh.
So the resonant frequency is 0 cycles a second, which means that if by the shape alone of building a tetrahedron, you can make an acoustic shape with no particular resonance frequency, which means that it's linear to music.
It's, yes.
So it's absolutely
yes.
neutral. It can
yes.
have reverb, but it will be smooth over the frequency spectrum. So that was the elementary point of the design of this tetrahedron.
Perhaps it's necessary for the listeners to just a little bit describe what the tetrahedron is. Think of a pyramid, but instead of having a square as a base, it is a triangle as a base, and all the sides are also triangles. So we are here under the top of this pretty strange shape.
And the strange shape, of course, which is heavily marketed as in crystals and everything else,
oh,
which
yes.
is it's so wonderful because you come in there and you think, oh no,
because
how did this happen?
Well, there's a whole philosophy around it. I'm not the inventor of the tetrahedron, of course,
right.
because it's an old Greek, the most elementary three-dimensional figure you can make.
Yes, exactly.
And actually, there is an American philosopher, and a little bit crazy philosopher, who wrote a lot about tetrahedrons. That's Buckminster Fuller.
Sure.
Who pointed my attention, actually, about the specific mathematical properties of the tetrahedron. It's also the most elementary form you can make. If you take three oranges and want to put them on top of each other, there's only one way of doing that.
Right.
It's in the
shape
of the tetrahedron.
Yes, yeah.
So, well, that's the tetrahedron, so we have that
yes.
since
1980. So here
1980.
You have it, and
yes,
the walls are painted silver, and the metal is atop that, which is also silver, and then there are blue structural elements, and it's very warm-sounding and hard-looking.
Yeah, we did design ourselves, and we did all the arc welding, because that's one of the elements I taught myself. Well, that's an aspect of Logos which is we will maybe run into, but it's pretty important, I think, that is. Next to our idea about refusing to reproduce old music and always playing over and over the same things, we felt sort of a certain discomfort with the instrument we were taught at the conservatory.
Sure.
See, at conservatories, they teach you instruments that at the latest come from the mid-19th century for the saxophones. About something like that, and all the others much older than that.
Yes.
So how could we live in a culture where musical expression should use tools that are at least 150 years old? We thought it was sort of obscene that nowadays musicians should still handle tools from that far in the past, are really incapable of developing more tools and more apt to expressing sounds of our culture, of our time. So that's at very early on I started this working. I had some knowledge about that in electronics and making my own circuits with technologies that were available, but not only electronics, also acoustical devices and other sound sources, a little bit continuing the line that was pointed at by people like Luigi Russolo in Futurism.
Right.
So you have different lines. It doesn't have to be electronic. Russolo has no electricity.
For our listeners, they may remember that only early in 2001 we actually read a large portion of The Art of Noises during one of our shows, so they may be reminded of the name Russolo from reading that essay.
So that led us into, designing our own instruments,
yep.
and then we wouldn't, particularly, I think, part of my responsibility to make many of these things. And the last couple of years I've been making not only instrument but also extending the notion of instrument into automats. So
right, because
music playing machines.
I'm looking around here and I see pipes and pianos and drums, and they go back, at least the drums go back as far as humanity. And
So
it's, you know, what have you done, what you've done differently? And I'm going to point our listeners to our website for this, because we will bring some photographs back with us as well. You have, in a sense, mechanized, and then after mechanizing, you have computerized the instruments in order to get back to your ability to play them in a different way.
Yeah, but there's a whole reason behind these instruments. You might wonder, well, Gottfried, but you are here automating pianos and drums and anklungs and whatever kind of elements. But finally, you're right. These are primitive instruments, not the piano, but at least the drums are. Now, how this? Well, early on with Logos, as I told you, we worked with electronics a lot. Now, there is a fundamental problem with electronic sound generation. That is the contact with the audience. There is no strict relation between your motoric efforts and what you get to hear in the loudspeaker. Turning a knob is a completely weird maneuver to do with your hands, because it's not logical that the sound goes louder when you turn it right. So audiences cannot anticipate on your gesture and relate the gesture with what comes out the speaker. Actually, with musical instruments, they can do it. If you play violin,
yes,
the bow movements are directly related,
yes,
with the sound produced.
Yes.
So the visual element of a performer on stage adds really to possibility of anticipating the musical story.
And for audiences, among the worst performances are those in which a person sits on stage blocked by their computer screen,
yeah,
and you see nothing but the back and two elbows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that is all.
That is all. That makes no sense. And I'd much rather take the CD home and listen to it there. You have to see concerts, after all. We got to understand that after having been organized more than many thousands of concerts here in Ghent, that a concert is basically a ritual.
Yes.
And it has to have convincing power and seducing power. If you do nothing on stage to seduce your audience, then why do you do the concert?
Why do they come?
Why do the people come? It's just laughing at them. It's that. So I felt that, and that was what we experienced with Logos when we started introducing these electronic instruments. We sat there on stage, at least those of us who played these things, turning knobs, buttons, switching wires every so often, have alligator clamps here, etc. Maybe a lot of mysticism around it, and
you're
people
sure
may wonder, oh, these guys must be really great and clever because they can handle all these weird machines. Okay, but there is no contact with the music production whatsoever. So I realized, now, this is not the way to go. If I cannot succeed in making this link between gesture and convincing audiences, this has to be a failure, to become a failure. So there we come on the automats. So I said, what if I take acoustical sound sources and control them by computers? Because this gives me the advantage that I don't have to have the skill and the craftsmanship anymore of playing extremely difficult things on these things, because I can have the computer play them on them. Yet the audience can relate to the sound sources because they see them moving.
Yep.
So I have something there. And such a drum, although it may be automatic, it's still a fascinating thing to see it move. It's like a little robot. We recognize something of ourselves in that machine that behaves really physically.
Now,
it's an element.
In your performances, have you created a performance board where you perform with big buttons and levers so that they can see that too?
No, I will come to that.
Okay.
We have the alternative is with movement. We do have.
Yes.
Okay.
We have one which is actually we've been working about 30 years now on ultrasonic and radar equipment.
We're going to talk about ultrasonic and radar equipment in just a little while, because as you probably have noticed by now,
Gottfried
is one of the best conversationalists you'll ever be on the other end of. Let's play a little bit of his stuff. This is from the CD called Logos Works. This is on XI. This is called Spring 94, music by Gottfried Wilmerass.
Thank you.
little Chotrid Velmaras there. He does sort of time suspend in his music sometimes.
Unlike his talking.
Right, unlike his conversation. Let's head back. Take a deep breath. Here comes Chotrid. More entertainment from Ghent. Here he is. And here's Monique as well, who will be interrupting him shortly.
Good. We do have. Yes.
Okay.
We have one, which is actually, it's been working about 30 years now on ultrasonic and radar equipment in terms to interface this kind of equipment with any kind of instrument,
yes.
Be it electronic or yes. Electromechanical instruments. And that's, I think, one of the most successful pieces over the years, because we have been performing these pieces well over 500 years, all over the 500 times all over the world. There is none here. Sorry, that was a lapsus.
I knew that the country was, you know, a powerful personality, but I didn't think 500 years.
So the Book of Moves and the Songbook are pieces in which we translate body movement without sensors or anything like that into movement that's captured by the computer. Then we can use the information as to velocity of movement, amount of body surface that you move, etc., and translate that as musical parameters on whatever external process. For more portable performances, we use a synthesizer or a sampler or anything like that.
Yep.
For the second piece, it's much more advanced because there is no synthesizers, no samplers in the game. It's all real-time processing of voice.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are, standing there with a wireless microphone and moving. And by our gesture, we can change the sound, the pitches, the timing, the polyphonic structure of what we vocally produce. So that actually works very well with audiences because they can immediately relate to it. You see, every sound is produced there. We can see how the manipulation goes. And what it does is it creates sort of a hyper-rhetoric kind of situation. Because when I talk normally to you, I can raise my voice, it's like that. But suppose I do this raise and now move my hands and I map the acceleration of my hands on my voice, then we get to hear, now I will do it. Cheap imitation.
Here we go.
And it gets amplified. This, all the slight modulations get amplified and gets modulated by the movement that accompanies the vocal sound production. So it's not a song piece, although it's called songbooks. We do not really sing songs, but it's all vocal utterances.
Vocal
of different kinds.
Origins,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Our listeners certainly understand.
And these two pieces are really fun to play because, like the first one Gottfried described, it's called A Book of Moves, and you can perform all instruments you want. So finally, that was the first time in my life I could play my harp. And it was an invisible harp. And you do the movement of the harp, and you hear the harp, and it's so great. And not only harp, all of a sudden I could play accordion, and I play flute, and all kinds of instruments. So it's an ability of, all of a sudden you feel like, great, without having to study all these years, all these instruments, I can do it. Still, Gottfried promised me when he was making it and preparing and still soldering and making the software, all these will be much more easy than any kind of instrument you have to learn. I can guarantee you it is not much more easy. It's so strange because you move and there is no parameter. You don't know where to move in the space because it's not a proximity device. So you stand there and you have to do it over and over again and try to have like 20 times the same movement to obtain the same sound. It's not so evident.
Is the software created to learn how you move one and over time it learns the gesture?
Yes, that's why all the different sections.
So you don't
pieces.
You don't map the gesture ahead of time. You map a parameter and then it learns the gesture that goes with it.
It looks to the shape of the gesture, like a smooth, a circular shape or a rectangular one. It looks to the shape of acceleration over time. All this kind of thing. And
so that,
to do that
Monique's gesture and your gesture are slightly different, but it learns how you use them.
Yes, but it is so that certain pieces can only be played by Monique because the computer has to do the learning program. She has to do them. I can't even do them.
It was the other way around. These pieces first only could be played by Gottfried because he built the instrument and he moves very quickly and I move very slowly and he can go like more karate. I just cannot do that. So it was so frustrating in the beginning. This thing would not react to my movement. And then he discovered, we are really very different.
Yeah.
And so he had to recompose and make different algorithms. So now we have each our own pieces. Some we can exchange, but not everything.
Is it set up so that you can perform a duet or a trio?
Well,
and the interrelationship is...
Theoretically, we could, but there's a practical problem. Since it's a radar system, the equipment is not capable of distinguishing one body from another. You can move with two people in a setup, but it's very difficult for the equipment to figure out, oh, this is Monique's movement, and this is Gottfried's movement, if we move simultaneously.
Okay, so it's a radar-based system, not a light-based system where you
it's
can have
light
three
based,
different...
No, it's not let out in space. It's, when you don't move, it actually doesn't perceive you. It's a system that only works on Doppler radar.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's fundamentally different. So it's not a visual thing at all. It works in the dark. It works everywhere.
Uh-huh. Songbook is even... I like to play songbook even more better than a book of moves because you can, with your voice, address the audience directly. It is a bit funny in the beginning if you're there without an instrument, playing an instrument, and you're just like... you don't say anything. I just move. And and now with songbook, that was the piece that came after the book of moves, with your voice, you can... say people something, just in jabber talk, make sounds, and then with the movement, you change these sounds. And it's more like an expression of your whole body. Because only moving and no voice and no instruments, it's a very strange thing to have that in front of all these people staring at you. You want to say them something.
you don't find it strange?
No, I find it so strange at all, because... After all, when I play the piano, I move my hands also, and the piano is also a strange foreign object. So if you remove the piano, I'm just moving something.
But you also have an intimate understanding of the software. The software So you are. There's a part of you that is.
Yeah, that's probably
part of you built into that. Yeah,
yeah, of course.
So you have played various instruments virtually, in a sense. Also, violin. Do I see pictures of you playing violin, or do...
No, I don't play violin.
Why do I think...
I play violin, not virtual. I play
a real violin.
Violin, an electric violin, and a fiddle from Mali. Now already two fiddles from Mali. Because these instruments have, instead of strings of steel... or gut strings, a string of hair of a horse. And it makes a very soft sound. And I like it very much because it's very close to a human voice, I think. And so I can communicate in jabber talk with my voice and with my instrument at the same time. And that's what I love to do.
Aha. So is this amplified or just pure?
It's just pure.
It's pure. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have old instruments too.
old exotic instruments. We have a pretty wide variety of instruments here. You see, through my own career as an instrumentalist, I went through also different stages. Actually, first, as I told you, in a bourgeois family, what's the instrument you get to play? Piano, of course, unavoidable. You get to learn the piano because that's the standard to which all music is measured.
even today, we're in the 21st century, and even today.
Yeah, but that was the 50s, but okay. So later on, as a sort of revolt against my parents wanting me to hold this piano, although I wasn't too bad at it, no, I take something else. I take the clarinet, which was considered a little bit dirty because you had saliva coming out and things like that.
Yeah.
Wet, and you put it in your mouth. It's not hygienic. It's not, there's no distance there. This is less civilized. And then in the 60s, I changed to percussion. Now, percussion is the bottom class of the symphony orchestra. That's the last thing. You get the lowest wages, but they used to get that at the time. Now it's changed. But that was really the thing, and that was also the most revolutionary instrument because it was really not well integrated into the whole Western music system. It's only used for decoration, a few couple of cymbals and kettle drums. But as soon as you go beyond that, you make revolution. Because there's no strict pitches very often. There is all sorts of weird rhythms. It's referring to lust and all sorts of things.
Plus, you also make expense.
Yeah.
Because you have to hire more percussionists to do more things.
Yeah. And there, through this percussion, because the idea was also... To get away through music, of course, to get away from only pitch and strictly time measured elements of whereof classical music is composed. So in percussion, you had something anarchistic. You had possibility of sounds that you couldn't really notate, And particularly if you looked into, for instance, gongs or ethnic, other ethnic percussion instruments, you get the wildest kind of sound categories, like Indonesian gamelans and African log drums or Mexican teponazlia and things like that. They're all wonderful instruments, and they have harmonic overtone series that are completely non-harmonic. And I started collecting instruments from abroad. So if you look around here, you will see that we have almost a complete gamelan. All the instruments from the big gongs to the genders. And
of course, our particular local listeners in Vermont will be very interested to hear that about the almost a complete gamelan, because the first gamelan in America is only a mile away from our radio station.
Wow.
The first gamelan built in America.
Built
in America. Yeah,
after Indonesian models,
yes.
Or in just Indonesia, because Lou Harris, as you probably know.
No, by Dennis Coast. Murphy was the first to build one after Indonesian models in America. He actually lives right around the corner from us and taught for many years at that school.
Oh,
and so, so it's very interesting to hear that you have brought percussion instruments from everywhere, including the gamelan.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Now, over the course of, it's more than 30 years. Over the course of 30 years, the popular music has shifted and changed.
Oh, we don't want to hear Calvos right now. I think we want to hear some more music. Don't you think that a little bit more music is a good idea?
Well, I had thought that, but he keeps shifting, and that's I thought maybe shifts would work, but I'm...
Well, let's hear it. Shifts will take us to the top of the hour. We can hear a little bit of conversation, and then we'll come back with the rest of the interview next week. It gets pretty wacky.
It does.
All right, let's listen to Shifts by Gertrude Wilmeras. Thank you. Shifts, Gottfried Wilhelm Rass.
Nice tinkly tune.
Yes, of the Logos Duo. By the way, the Logos Duo, with all of their technology and their instruments and their funky stuff, will be here on August 25th and 26th for the Ought One Festival.
They're flying business class.
Business class,
to get their
yes.
equipment over here.
Many Belgian francs to get here. So if you want to know about that, by the way, we'll tell you more information later. Go to either Ought-One, that's Ought-One.com, or calvos.org, and you'll find out lots more about the festival. In the meantime, let's go back to listen to more of what Gottfried has to say, and we'll try to interrupt Gottfried and Monique. Well, we'll try to interrupt
who knows, who can
at
say.
Some point. Lots more to go with this wonderful interview.
Now, over the course of, well, now it's more than 30 years. Over the course of 30 years, the popular music has shifted and changed to incorporate electronics, world music, automation, computer synchronization, all of those things that you were working in early. Yeah. What do you have to offer now to the audiences who have heard all of these other sounds in a kind of a commercial context?
Well, it's the thing, don't think it's the sounds themselves. It's true. You can, in sampling time, there is no original sounds you can, so to speak, make anymore. But what you can do is working on the syntax and the way it all binds together. For instance, what I'm doing now, right now, a lot, is writing software, algorithmic composition software, not only to make sounds, etc., but just to how do you make a musical syntax. See, for instance, you find very elementary algorithmic software also in techno music,
yes,
which I find
absolutely.
In many respects very interesting,
yep.
Much more interesting than anything rock has produced. That's personal opinion, but... This is what I think. But I see there are fairly elementary applications of algorithms. What they do not have is form. They don't make a story. There's nothing in time that spans something. There is no real rhetoric shape.
That's correct.
And I tried
yes.
to... I tried to.
But it's also deliberate.
It's maybe deliberate, but it's also the weakness.
Aha.
Because you couldn't... I could not imagine go and listen to a techno concert.
So you don't go to a techno event that goes all night long and just sort of...
Well, because I can take a chunk of it and then the next chunk and it will be different, but there's nothing that relates these different chunks unless you start moving and doing like that, but that's, well, that's probably my age. I'm not getting old, but let's see. I'm not...
Well, what's 30 years in 500?
Yeah. This is the way what you do with this music. From a listening point of view, I couldn't imagine going and for 1 hour listening to techno music.
That's
something else.
In that respect, Gottfried and I are very different because Gottfried thinks of structures in compositions that have to be there, like a starting point and going to a climax and then going to an ending point and then
whatever. Not
a
necessarily.
Real composition. For me, a real composition is does not have to have that. I love drone music, like ever going on things. And Gottfried said, I feel like claustrophobic if I have to play in there. For me, it's just endlessness because it has no climax, it has no beginning, no end. Of course, it stops sometimes, but it can go on for all time. And I think what I then personally think that I can offer to that scene where everything is already done, in fact, is like a kind of, I would call it content, but that sounds very pretentious. I don't want to say that. A lot of other musics that I hear through mass media are just there for the
decoration.
I think we call them wallpaper.
Yeah, wallpaper, decoration,
like,
so yeah.
And unspanning, what is that word? Like enjoyment, but not thinking and just
background music or... We don't have we call it muzak or wallpaper
music. Yeah, you don't
really
music. Have to listen
no
to
consciousness
it. Yeah.
of it. It's just, it's there.
You come home from work, you are too tired to do anything on, and then you switch on the radio and
it's
that's
there.
It. And I think in new music still, there is something else that we can do, and that is like saying something, telling something through sounds, when I can just share a sound with you that you have a sense of being together and being a part of a larger entity, being part of like nature or even universe. I think that's an essential thing that you will never find in the contemporary things hearing on the mass media. And in that respect, Gottfried and I...
Yeah, but I disagree there with you, you know.
That's my idea.
Because with your drone thing, for me, the fundamental problem is how do you talk people into it? You need something to seduce them. If I have to make a con... Okay, it's all very
but
simple.
But what is wrong with the pure sound?
There is nothing wrong with the pure sound,
okay,
provided the people just... Because if I go to a techno party, let's say, I know beforehand what I'm going to.
Yeah.
So I already know, I have an expectation, mm-hmm, and it will confirm my expectation also, generally,
yeah,
most of the time. Now, that's not my situation as an experimental music maker. I try to make something new so that the people do not cannot anticipate what's Gottfried going to do now. So my task is completely different. I cannot just do my thing and the people are all pleased. Oh, Gottfried does his thing again. No, I do a different thing. Now I have to talk the people into accepting this different thing. So I have the task to seduce them. And if you want to seduce people, that's not what they know already, then I have to have a method of doing that. And then I need this element of rhetoric. So that's why I think it's the weakness of, not of Monique's pieces, but of this concept.
But we're going to get back to that next week, because this is where the argument gets hot and heavy. We're going to pick it up. We're going to back it up a little bit to that point in the discussion where the argument begins. And as soon as that happens, we'll have the opportunity to get embroiled ourselves. You know, you're always welcome to call us, 454-7762, that's area code 802, and offer your comments, particularly on topics like this, and we'll pass them along not only to the composers involved, but also to our audience here on Calvus and Damien. But for this week, that's as much of the interview as we have time for. That's only halfway through, so get excited for next week. And for now?
For now?
That was good.
What?
You'll have to go to the next one.
Hi, this is John Levin, and you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar. Whether you're live in Plainfield or on the internet, it's your red alert for new music.
Well, let's have some
enthusiasm there.
I'm not used to being on the radio. Hello out there, radio listeners. This is John Levin, and you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar. Your red alert for new music.
Here on WGDR Plainfield.
I'd never get it out.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, gosh. So next week, more of Fatrine Villam-Ras and Monique Darge, and as they get hot and heavy about the differences between their compositional styles and what's wrong. And what's wrong with music today. They were lots of fun, let me tell you. Let's listen to some more of Monique's music. This is from Mocha Q, Cyclic. This is Counterflate and Monique Darge doing track one. There.
So you call that symmetry?
Symmetry. Yes. Fearful.
Mm-hmm.
Fearful symmetry.
All right.
Symmetry.
Oh, all right.
Isn't that how it rhymes? Never mind. Okay, that was Monique Darge from Mocha Q. That was the first cut from that. That's available from Logos. And you can go to calvos.org, K-A-L-V-O-S.org, to take the link over to Logos Foundation, or you can go right to www.ping.be/Logos, L-O-G-O-S. Find out more. Lots of CDs you can get from them, lots of interesting stuff. Shall we hear more?
Yeah, maybe if they could even pick up one at the festival.
Oh, well, of course. We will have beaucoups of CDs and T-shirts and mugs and all kinds of tacky souvenirs, especially tacky Calvos and Damien souvenirs, and very fine compact discs for availability.
I think we can do lots in the tacky. We won't have any tacky CDs either? I think we will.
We might, we might. Let's listen to some Khatri Vilam Ras, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the festival before we play our last piece for today.
Fine.
Here's the third movement of Khatri's Jumpy Variations. This one's called Totems.
Bye.
Gottfried Wilhelm Rass, that from his music for new music for player piano, that was the third section, wrong switch there, Totems from Jumpy Variations.
Yes, that wasn't too jumpy.
Wait for things to happen, but sometimes they just don't. You don't.
Oh, I hear something happening now.
Music in the background.
Yes, yes, yes. What might this be then?
This is music of Mark Gibbons. This is called How Much, How Little.
Gibbons. Orlando's son, is it?
Yeah, it must be, yes. Something recorded by Calvos and Damien in Amsterdam in, February 19th of this year. And we picked up a little bit of music of Gibbons and Hamburg and a few other people. And it turned out that not long afterwards, Mark Gibbons gave us a call because we've played a few of his other tunes on the show and said, oh, I'm going to be in Vermont. So he will be here live, on the air.
My gracious.
The end of this month, the end of June. I believe that's, what, the 30th? Our last show of the month. So join us for Mark Gibbons at the end of this month. Of course, next week for the rest of Monique Darge and Gertrude de Willem Ras from Logos in Ghent, Belgium. Now the festival.
Oh, that.
Things have started to take off.
We
have 106 composers and another 30 or 40 performers joining them for the festival August 25th and 26th of this year, 2001, here at the radio station and surrounding grounds at Goddard College. More formal announcement that we are hosted by Goddard College. We are sponsored by the Vermont Contemporary Music Ensemble and by the Consortium of Vermont Composers and by WGDR in cooperation with WCVT, Classical Vermont, WDEV, the Vermont's radio pioneer, and with additional assistance from a number of organizations, including Pogus Records, and with assistance as well from the New England Culinary Institute and a number of other places, which we will let you know about in the future. It's going to be an incredible festival. It runs from noon to about 11 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, the 25th and 26th of August. Go to calvos.org or ought-one.com for lots of information, or you can drop us a card here at Box 336 Plainfield, and we'll send you all kinds of goodies about the festival. The tickets are going to sell pretty quickly for this because it is an international festival. People are already making their arrangements to come here from various places around the world. So if you're local, if you're listening to us now, or if you're listening to us on the Internet, go to calvos.org or ought-one.com and look at the ticket area right away to see what's going to happen on this thing. The list of composers is there, a list of events, over 30 concerts over the course of that 2 days. In Studio Z, our favorite location, in the atrium, in the outdoor stages, and in the hay barn. So have a look.
That said,
yes.
May we put out a radiophonic plea
for
string players?
Oh, yeah. We actually, this is kind of an interesting thing has happened. We had a string quartet beginning to work on this project with us, and some of the music is a little on the rough side, abusive.
Yes.
So if you are a real hot string player, especially someone who hasn't been in touch with the sort of the regular performing ensembles in the area and think you're just so darn good, why don't you get in touch with us, calvos@calvos.org, K-A-L-V-O-S at calvos.org, and let us know you're out there because we want a couple of really hot pieces that need to be played, and we want to know who you are. Violin, viola, or cello, get in touch with us.
Or contrabass. We could use a contrabass.
Oh, yeah, contrabass, too. That's for actually one other piece. That's right. Two pieces. So, all right,
one last thing.
Yes.
In a banjo quintet, the first banjo quintet in all of New England, here is your opportunity.
Exactly. Not a banjo, but banjo quintet in the traditional way of expressing it, one banjo plus string quartet.
Right.
Yes. Right, right. For the banjoists around, that might they might think five banjos. No, 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 no. We would never do that on Calvus and Damien.
Difficult.
Yes, yes. One banjo, one string quartet playing together. All right, let's listen to the rest of Mark Givens. We'll see you next week with Monique Darge and Hutrid Willem Ross. Don't forget, Calvus, K-A-L-V-O-S.org, and write to us, calvus@calvus.org. And we're here, and here's music.
And what's the name of the tune?
Oh, yeah. How much? How little? Mark Givens.
Thank you.